It's Sound Effect on KPLU. I'm Gabriel Spitzer. Our theme today is War and Peace. And now a story about how war makes ordinary people do extraordinary things. For this, we go back in time to World War II and across the world to southern Norway. There in the midst of a frozen wilderness on the edge of an icy cliff sits a hydroelectric plant called Vermok. And deep within this hulking fortress was a factory within a factory. And that made a rare substance that was crucial to Adolf Hitler's most diabolical fantasies. That plant manufactured something called heavy water, and it was a key ingredient for an atomic bomb. The Allies figured that if Hitler got his hands on this stuff, the Germans could win the war. So they wanted to destroy the plant, and their first plan was to bomb it to smithereens. But a Norwegian named Leif Tronstad, who helped design the plant, he knew better.
Tronstad said, well, you're going to have a very hard time hitting this plant. It's in this very deep valley that the sun rarely shines upon. And second of the matter is, this fortress is tens of thousands of pounds of steel and stone. And the heavy water plant, the most important part of it, is in the basement. So you can lob bombs at this thing all day, and you have a small chance of actually destroying it.
That's Seattle author Neil Bascom, who wrote about the history of Vermok in his new book, The Winter Fortress. And he says Leif Tronstad, who was a scientist, not a military guy, spearheaded a new sabotage plan.
So the Allies decided that they want to send a larger team of British sappers in to bomb the plant.
And British sappers, there's like British special forces
British,
kind of?
British Royal Engineers, British commandos. But these guys can't just drop into Norway. They need guides. And so the British decided they're going to send a four-man team of Norwegians, a team called Operation Grouse, to land into Norway a month before this assault, prepare intelligence, and be on hand to lead them to the plant.
So you had these four guys that parachuted in on their own to lay the groundwork, and then they were going to send in the cavalry.
Exactly. And these four individuals, three of them were from the town. So they knew that area like the back of their hand.
So they make it in. And what happens to the cavalry?
The cavalry comes in by glider. Technology malfunction, bad weather, disaster. One of the planes crashes. Some of the sappers get captured. The Gestapo brings them in, tortures them, and then kills them. And by the end of the torture and the interrogation, the Gestapo knows the plans for the attack on Vermok.
So how is that not the end of your book?
Well, simultaneously with the crash, Leif Tronstad and Colonel Wilson decide the Allies still need to hit this plant. The best way to do it is a small Norwegian commando team. Thus, the start of Operation Gunnerside.
So Operation Gunnerside. So those were more Norwegian commandos who were going to join up with those first four, the Operation Grouse team, and they were going to do it super stealth style, much more precision than the big British team.
Exactly. You have the six men of Operation Gunnerside. They're trained on a mock heavy water plant that Leif Tronstad builds for them. And Tronstad tells them every door, every stairwell, every access point to the plant. They are parachuted in to meet up with Operation Grouse. Together, they hit the plant.
So what was life like for the Grouse team then in the months that ensued as they waited for the plan to come back together in its new form?
Well, Grouse lived for essentially the next 3 months on their own in this wilderness plateau, suffering blizzard after blizzard in a place that got so cold, legend had it, that flames froze in the fire so quickly. And if they'd not been able to hunt for reindeer, they would have died. So Gunnerside is going to pair up with Grouse, which eventually happens after a 14-day blizzard that almost killed all of them. And on the night of February 27th, they make their approach to the plant.
And how do they do that?
Well, as I mentioned, this winter fortress is on the side of a cliff. Well, this Gunnerside team decides that our best chance is to climb up this cliffside, this 500-foot cliffside, in the middle of the night in February without any lights or any sort and reach a railway line which runs along the cliffside to the neighboring town. Sounds perfectly reasonable, doesn't it?
I guess if you're a bunch of commandos.
No, exactly. If you're Norwegian commandos. I mean, even the local boys, they initially said, well, there's no way. They were told as children, do not climb this cliffside.
So what happens?
They climb up the cliffside and they slip in, two parties. All the doors that they thought would be open are now closed. So suddenly they're, in some senses, not freaking out, but they're concerned, how are we going to get into this plant? Thankfully, Tronstadt, the individual who built the plant, said, well, there's this little channel of cables and pipes that you can climb up and into and shimmy your way through to get into the basement level.
They claw their way through this tunnel, and then they finally emerge into the belly of the beast, the heart of the Winter Fortress. Can you describe what they find there, what they see?
So the heart of the Winter Fortress, curiously, is unguarded, because the Germans never thought that anyone could possibly get through the minefields, through the barbed wire fences, through the searchlights, through all the security that they had set up. And so the basement level is essentially what you would find in a factory, tall ceilings, sounds of the hydroelectric plant in the distance, and these 18 cylinders creating heavy water. There was a single foreman who was Norwegian watching over the heavy water plant, but that was it.
And so they finally set all these charges, they get their fuses out, they're ready to light them, and then in this surreal moment, you write about the foreman there saying, hey, wait a minute, where's my glasses?
It's a wonderful little moment in this story because it's a very human moment, right? This guy suddenly, who's watching this plant, realizes he can't find his glasses, needs help. And Ronenberg takes time off to search for these glasses for this individual, hands them back to them, and then proceeds with the operation. Set the explosives, and boom.
So how likely did it seem that they were going to get out of there alive?
Unlikely, at best. They all had suicide pills. They had the suspicion that they could get in. Maybe one of them would still be alive to blow up the plant. Getting out was a totally different kind of thing. And what's awesome is they were able to get out and then escape this massive manhunt over the next few months.
On skis.
On skis. A lot of this story happens on skis. A great majority of it.
Is that why it was so important to Tronstadt to get Norwegians to do this?
It was. They need to be able to survive in this environment. They need to know how to build a snow cave on an instant notice. They need to know how to hunt reindeer. And the only people who they thought they could do that was Norwegians.
Wow. So they managed to blow the thing up. What difference do you think that this made, ultimately, in the Nazi atomic bomb project?
Well, if you take together all the operations, gunner side, the American bombing that comes afterwards, and then a final sabotage mission of a transport of heavy water, it essentially stopped the Germans from having the heavy water they needed to create their nuclear research.
So you can see how this would be a big priority for the Allies and for the British government. But it must have taken extraordinary motivation from the saboteurs themselves. I mean, these men who persevered through so much and assumed that they were probably going to get themselves killed in the process. What motivated them, and how do you know?
I mean, Leif Tronstadt knew, of course, atomic bomb, this is what we're stopping. Most of the other commandos had no idea what they were doing. They were told the Germans might use it to create explosive that could blow up London. But they largely discounted that. I mean, these were didn't believe it. And they say they didn't believe it. They thought that Tronstadt and the SOE was just selling them the importance of this mission so that they would take it seriously. But they didn't need to be sold. These guys were doing it out of patriotism, out of freedom for Norway, and atomic bombs and everything else were secondary at best. It's all about this town, this moment, your family.
Well, Neil Bascom is a Seattle-based author, and his book is called Winter's Fortress, The Epic Mission to Sabotage Hitler's Atomic Bomb. You can also find the young adult version, which is called simply Sabotage. Neil, thank you so much for being on our show.
Thank you.